Welcome back to the program, Red Spotters. I am Alexis Soto, sitting in for Kyle Lara, and I am joined by Peter Martinez on this lovely weeknight, and we are going to review some more of the films that we have been seeing to catch up for award season, as well as films that we want to see that will be in consideration for our top 10 lists. And I want to make that very clear as to why we have been prolonging, as it were, our show of the top 10 movies of 2017, at least our favorite movies of 2017. And that is because for the first time ever, this crew is doing its due diligence to scour the landscape, as it were, of so many movies that came out in 2017, because I think, as Peter will admit, 2017 was an exceptional year in film. That is why, in the meantime, we are taking this series right now. This is like part three of an ongoing series of reviewing these films. So we're really just trying to absorb these things as fast as possible. That way we can get those lists out for you. And we so appreciate your patience for that. Today we are going to review Call Me By Your Name and Darkest Hour and Molly's Game, for sure. Maybe another one in there somewhere if it comes up at all. And so this is Red Spotlight number 87. All right. So for those of you who haven't been listening to our previous installments, we have already reviewed Three Billboards, Disaster Artist, Lady Bird, Get Out, Dunkirk, The Post, and The Shape of Water. And I want to talk about Darkest Hour first. Is that okay with you? Wonderful. Okay, so Peter, what did you think of this movie? Of course, alongside The Last Jedi. That's wonderful to hear. I wanted to kind of just to clarify here. You think this is a great film or just a really good movie? Because I know I'll get to me right now. I really enjoyed it as well, but I'm kind of in this zone where I'm kind of there are certain issues that I have. That's kind of like, it's like, I personally feel, after watching this movie and also having really enjoyed it, that it, I would say, fell short of being considered actually great. I think it's really good, but I think there may be, maybe it was an issue with the director. I don't know what happened, but I felt there was something that was missing, and I can't pinpoint what it was to truly say that this was a great movie. But before we get to that, I think that'll be the overlying question we'll get to at the very end of this discussion. Before we get to that, I think what's very clear to say is, regardless of the quality of the film, Gary Oldman is outstanding as Winston Churchill. And Oh, it's, I think it's without question one of the best performances of the year alone. And, you know, a lot of times that we cover and people watch a lot of films that are quote unquote Oscar bait, you know, made for Oscars. A lot of times you get good movies with great performances. And every now and then you'll get a movie that is great, but also has a great performance. You know, sometimes, there are other things lacking. Examples that I can draw right now in which great performances were given that weren't necessarily in great films. And this is purely based on how the movie was received. I had not seen Jackie, but by all accounts, Natalie Portman's performance was really the only thing about that movie that was worthwhile. And I think that really speaks to this trend. And when a lot of people don't like Oscar bait movies, it's because oftentimes the performance is the only thing carrying the movie. Another example would be Julianne Moore for her Academy Award winning role of Still Alice. Still Alice is a good movie, but it's not a great movie. And as far as Darkest Hour is concerned, I think it's much better than what the standard would be established. And I really liked, first of all, I loved Gary Oldman's performance. I thought it was powerful, and I thought it was what Winston Churchill has been. And, you know, the crux of the film is definitely is he has been right. And I mean, just to get into what Darkest Hour is, spoilers, it's pretty much Dunkirk, or what happens when you're not seeing Dunkirk. It really, right? It's almost as if this is a companion piece, right? So all of the stuff that you like was missing from Dunkirk, like for you and me, was in Darkest Hour, because like this is actual story, and this is some consequences and the stakes. And I think what this movie succeeds most of all is portraying this feeling of the Darkest Hour, that the end is near. And as the movie builds and builds and builds, and as Winston is ever so stubborn to not accept peace, that he knows that he can't reason with a madman, and everybody around him is telling him, no, if we are to survive, we have to back down and accept what we have now. And you see him throughout the whole film just push back against any idea of a peace talk. And yet, when the consequences become more dire, and when extinction literally is looking more and more likely, and I think as all of us do, we begin to doubt ourselves once those once things become that dire. And really, that's what this is, Britain's Darkest Hour, in the sense that everyone was in full-on panic mode, especially the people in charge, the cabinet and the government and the parliament of that country, was really trying to find a way around annihilation. And what is the most important decision here is, what is Winston Churchill going to do? And I like that they kind of do portray both options as being equally important. And I mean, at the time, especially. Now, I don't know about you. I'm sorry? Do they what? Let me rephrase that. I think they portray both of the options as being something that sounds right in the moment in history. When you're there and you're that individual, and once things become so drastic and desperate that one of the options that you had so rejected is suddenly more realistic than previously expected, I think at that point, if you're in that moment in history, you can see a rationale for going one way or the other. Whether the movie portrays it that way, I think at that in a particular scene, I will say yes, but obviously it does a 180 and goes right back to where it was in the first place. And the right answer from the beginning to the end was not to submit. And I don't know about you, but I definitely had a sense, this is kind of like Lincoln, right? Only for British people. Yeah. I'm not talking about Abraham Lincoln the man. I'm talking about the parallels in which the movie. No, you're not. What I'm saying is that in the movie, there are two options that Lincoln the man has to go down. He has to decide whether or not to accept a peaceful surrender or to end the war by way of the abolitionist amendment, right? You can't have both. It had to be one or the other. And he had to find the right way, the right avenue to achieve what would be a historic achievement. And I think a similar choice is pressed upon Winston Churchill here, that he has to decide between two options, one being peace or surrender, and the other one being war. Okay, yeah. Do you like that, or do you think you would have liked to have seen more of the opposition point of view? By the numbers, straightforward. Yeah, traditional. And that was one of the things that I was hearing up very early in the award season, is that this movie, while good, is very traditional in its style and its approach. And I want to ask you about, what do you feel about the movie landing on the side of Winston Churchill and the decisions that he makes in this? What do you think of him as a leader that you see in this movie, and what you walk away from that? Right. No. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was an option, but you're not talking about peace. You're talking about surrender. You're talking about... Yeah, that's... And you're so right about that. I think the line that comes to mind is when he says to his war cabinet, "You cannot reason with a lion when your head is in its mouth." It was a great line because it described perfectly the situation that they were in. And that's how you describe somebody like Adolf Hitler, who, you know, were so many years off or so many decades off from that Second World War. But I think it was clear to anybody, and really it should have been clear to the world then, that what Adolf Hitler was after was world domination. Yes, yes. Where have I heard that before in these times? Is he really going to do this? Is he really going to do that? Really? Right, right. They kept mentioning throughout the movie that he, the reason, one of the primary reasons why he was selected to succeed Neville Chamberlain as prime minister was because I think it had been a good 10 years now that Winston Churchill was saying that this Adolf Hitler is a bad man. So he's had a record of he always had a bad, bad feeling about Adolf Hitler before most people did. No, I definitely agree with you. Go ahead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, being a genius, I think it may, yeah, being a genius may be a bit step far, because I mean, what really is the definition of a genius? But I think, go ahead. At the right time, yeah. No, Churchill is a very interesting... You know what? The Crown on Netflix actually deals with this long after World War II, when he comes back into office. And I think that might answer some of the questions you have about Winston Churchill. Whether or not he was a great leader in peacetime, you get to see that happen in The Crown, particular season one. And John Lithgow also gets a great performance. And I have to admit, one of the reasons why I was very hesitant about watching this movie is because, I'm sorry, John Lithgow is amazing as Winston Churchill. And I will admit, for the first half hour or so, the way the accent or the voice that Gary Oldman was doing Churchill threw me off a little bit, because I was so accustomed to what Lithgow did on The Crown, which is a very good show. I recommend you watching it. if you ever so choose, which is filled with other great performances. The one thing that will get you on the side of the Brits is if Disney is on the other side. That is disgusting, Peter, and you should know that. You are disgusting. I do want to share, though, some moments of... because I think the best thing about this movie is the performance, and I think we should probably give out some examples of why this was such a grand performance. And like one of the reasons I already gave you was in that war cabinet. It was like the way he yells is with such power. When like you can't reason with a lion when your head is in his mouth. But also, I thought one powerful moment in the movie is when he's talking to his secretary, you know, the one that types all of his speeches for him. And he finds out that her brother had died, I think, trying to go back to Dunkirk or trying to come back from Dunkirk. And there are no words about his death. He just stares at her. And you can tell how overcome with emotion he was. And I think that really is the power of what Gary Oldman gives with this performance. And I mean, I remember that scene myself wanting to break down because of how much it meant to him and how that scene was particularly executed. And I think another one, which apparently is a scene of contention, because in that the scene where he goes to the subway and he's talking with ordinary people. How did you take that scene, Peter? Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I personally enjoyed that scene. There's nothing really for me to hate too much about it. But when I was watching it, I certainly got the sense like, okay, this is the part where a lot of people are going to groan and moan and are going to be taken out of the movie, because here are the visual cues, you know, when they all, excuse me, when they all say their names, or when he asks them, would you ever accept a peace negotiation with Hitler? And they all say, never, never, never. And it's like, okay. I mean, okay. I mean, not more than just, I get it. But it's like, that is not how real life goes. I mean, that's really a made for a movie thing. And it's kind of hard to blame them, because of course this is a movie and it is meant to glorify these certain moments, and I thought the power behind it was nice, and I think it came across effectively. But even I was like, okay, let's dial it back a little bit. And you know, maybe you're going too far when me, of all people, is beginning to like, okay, maybe this is too much preachy stuff going on. And it happened again a few moments.